The time is now. Volume 8, Episode 140. This is Employment Law Now. I am Mike Schmidt, the host of this podcast and the Vice Chair of the Labor and Employment Department at Cozen O'Connor. Hello, hello, hello. We are in 2024. We are starting Season 8, and this is our very special 7th anniversary episode. It is hard to believe that we've been doing it this long. February 1st, 2017, to be specific, was our very first episode. I thought maybe this would last 6 months, maybe a year at best. But thanks to all of you who have been listening all of these years, and thanks to all of the terrific guests that have come onto this podcast and have made me sound better than I actually am. Here we are in February 2024 celebrating a 7th anniversary. I can't be more appreciative and have really loved being able to do this. So thank you all so much for listening, and I hope to be able to continue to do this not only through this 8th season of the podcast, but for a whole long time after that. For today's episode, our first of 2024, I am here to answer three very big questions, three burning questions on the top of everybody's mind. Question number one, how long are we able to continue to wish people a Happy New Year after January 1st? I've been debating this with people for the past several weeks. There are some folks who say, no, no, I'll give you the week of the new year, that's it. There are other people who say, January 31st, that's the end of it. Still, there is another group that says, well, if you haven't seen or spoken with somebody, the first time that you do, that's when you can still wish them a Happy New Year. I'm not sure exactly where I fall on that all-important survey. But I do want to wish everybody a happy and healthy new year. I hope you all had a terrific holiday season, however long ago that seems at the moment. But here we are in 2024, so many exciting things to look forward to, so many great things to talk about, particularly in the world of labor and employment law. I don't know where you come out on that issue. If you feel like emailing me your answer, please feel free to do that. I'm at mschmidt@cozen.com. Let me know what you think. When can people continue to still say Happy New Year after January 1st? I will be happy to publicize the results on a later episode. Burning question number two, somewhat related. Mike, where have you been in January? Burning question number two, where have I been in January? It's February. It's the first episode of 2024. Well, I have to tell you, I spent the bulk of the month of January fighting what really was a bad case of laryngitis. And since really the main part of the podcast is talking, me not being able to do that inhibited my ability to come out with any kind of new episode in January. So I'm real sorry about that. I know how much you missed this, but I missed it too. My voice is back. I am back and better than ever for season number 8. Now that we got through those first two questions, I want to get through question number 3, burning question number 3. What is going on with the state of politics? And how will that be continuing to impact employers? Well, as you all know, because you've been listening to me since 2017, my very first guest, my inaugural guest on February 1st, 2017, was the great Howard Schweitzer, the head of Cozen O'Connor's Public Strategies Group here at Cozen O'Connor, of course. And since then, Howard has been gracious enough to be my anniversary guest each year on February for my special anniversary episode of this podcast. And so once again, for this 7th anniversary episode, I've got Howard to come back on to talk about all things politics. Here we are in an incredibly important election year. He's going to give some prognostications. He's going to talk about some of the labor and employment issues that employers and employees should be taking note of, and what we may be seeing as 2024 continues to roll along. So I present to you again my annual guest, Howard Schweitzer. Howard Schweitzer, welcome back.
Mike Schmidt, good to be back. How many years is this now?
So this is now my 7th anniversary episode. As I just told everybody, February 1st, 2017, I kicked this thing off, and I kicked it off with you talking about politics back in 2017.
Mike, that's a lot of years of affecting yourself to me talking about politics, but
well, you know what?
I appreciate it.
There's a reason we keep wanting you back. You're insightful. I mean, you know, we don't push it. It's only once a year we have you back, but you're insightful. It's great, and I feel like every time you come on in February to talk about politics and the state of the world, there's something going on, like there's stuff happening, and here we are in another crazy election year that we're going to get into in a minute. But
I think you could just hit replay from one of our prior broadcasts since we have a rematch. But anyway, we'll get to that.
Well, and that's actually funny that you say that, because as I was thinking about this before we signed on here, thinking about how you were, you know, guest number one in 2017. In some respects, it seems like that was lifetimes ago for us, but in some respects, it seems like it was yesterday. Just from a 30,000-foot standpoint, has a lot changed since 2017 when we're talking about politics? Is the world just completely different and new, or, you know, have a lot of things stayed the same?
I mean, I think the world is very different than it was 8 years ago. You've got Trump firmly in control of the Republican Party. You've got a Democratic Party that has shifted leftward from a policy point of view, although still governed from the center left with Biden, so maybe less change there. But I think you've had more moderates leave elected office, and yeah, I think the parties have shifted more to the extremes. And in the case of the Republicans, you know, firmly, like I said, in control of Trump.
Yeah, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself here. I wanted to sort of ease into the Trump versus Biden discussion. But, I mean, do you think it's a good thing, or maybe it's not a matter of good or bad? I mean, to your point, I agree with you. I mean, we have gotten just so to the extreme on both sides, regardless of what party affiliation you have, and this is carried into the whole world. I think everyone has become so much more polarized on whatever issue it is. You think that's the way it's going to be, or, you know, are we going to do? Can we see a place sometime in the near future where we all become a little bit more civil, a little bit more moderate, and maybe I shouldn't be equating moderate and civil, but you know what
I mean? Yeah, I mean, I still think most people are fundamentally in the middle, and it's the system, it's the way we elect candidates, particularly in the primaries, that pushes people more to the extremes, and some kind of systemic change is going to be needed for that to change. But I think if you got people, if you got a cross-section of people in this country together, generally they're going to agree on 80% of the issues. Or they may not agree, but they're not going to be wildly off from one another. I think most people are in the center.
So is it just
we don't hear from those people as much or as loudly as the people on either extreme?
Yeah, they don't draw clicks. They don't draw eyeballs to televisions. And they don't vote in primaries. That's the reality, is they don't vote in primaries. And so we get these extreme candidates.
And they don't... Yeah, I'm sorry, good.
No, they don't, and that's not where you raise money. You raise money with fire and brimstone, and you know, that happens on the extremes.
So if that's true, do we also then get skewed results from the primaries because the people who, you know, are not voting who might otherwise be voting in the general elections?
Well, we get skewed candidates. So it's tough to, you know, that in the last cycle, the Democrats, the Republicans way underperformed expectations because the candidates, you know, Herschel Walker in Georgia is an example. The candidates, Kari Lake in Arizona, you know, these more extreme candidates that emerged from the primaries weren't viable in the general. And so the Republicans were basically giving away seats.
Yeah. So I'm getting ahead of myself just a little bit. I do want to, for those folks, and I can't imagine there are any of them who have not been listening to every single one of our anniversary episodes, remind us about your practice here at Cozen O'Connor and sort of the things that you do in the political and public policy space these days.
Yeah. So, Mike, I run Public Strategies, Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies, which is the firm's policy affiliate. We've got approximately 50 professionals across six states, plus Washington, D.C. We're in New York, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Illinois, and Minnesota, and New Jersey, and Washington, and then three of the six largest cities in the country in New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia, Pittsburgh as well. And we advocate for our clients before government officials in those jurisdictions and across a range of industries and in a number of different ways. We also do public affairs and media relations, which is relatively new for us. As you know, I came out of the executive branch of government, served in both the Bush and Obama administrations. And so a lot of my work is before whoever happens to be in office in Washington in the executive branch. And but I work, you know, on Capitol Hill as well.
Yeah, and you've had the perspective of being on both sides of the aisle in terms of the administrations.
I have, which is relatively unique. I mean, most people in Washington are one or the other. I'm a guy who has worked for both sides, as you said, and was career before I was political. And so that's kind of my calling card in Washington, is that I'm a guy who knows how the system works, has worked with everybody, knows how to work with everybody, and can talk to whoever's, regardless of who's sitting in 1600 Pennsylvania, I know how to talk to them.
So last year at this time, we were in February 2023. We talked about it at that point as being halfway through Biden's first term as president. And we were wondering out loud if we were where we thought we would be midway through the term. Looking back now, we've had a year since that discussion. How would you evaluate the past year since then with the Biden administration?
I think it's gone relatively well. And again, I feel like I have to caveat this by saying I'm the proverbial man in the middle. Like, again, I've worked for both sides. And I think he's doing a fine job. I think, look, the world is messy. We've got two major conflicts taking place on the global stage with Ukraine and Israel and Gaza. I am of the view that he's navigated both of those fairly well. I think again, the party politics of 2024 don't necessarily match up for either side with where they would have been 25 years ago. But I'm of the view that he's navigated both both very, very difficult situations fairly well. I think the economy is better than people expected it to be. He doesn't get any credit for that. But I think he's, look, again, this is me trying to call a spade a spade. And I think he's done a fine job amidst difficult circumstances. Inflation's coming down. The stock market's doing well. He's not getting credit for the economic picture being what it is and being positive. People don't feel as good as the data suggests they should, but could be a hell of a lot worse.
So I think there's a lot of people out there who agree with that assessment, that he's doing a fine job, maybe that he's not getting enough credit for certain things. But in fairness, there's also a lot of people on the other side who think that, you know, he's not doing good enough and could be doing more. So what are the weaknesses that you think the Republican candidate, and we'll get into the breaking news as to who you think that will be. Where do you think the weaknesses are that the Republican candidate is going to be able to poke some holes in the Biden administration record?
Well, I mean, it's not breaking news, but his age, obviously, and communication, they haven't been able to capture the imagination of the American people with their messaging. And I don't think they've communicated their successes particularly effectively. Look, notwithstanding what I said about the fact that he's navigated the situation in the Middle East and situation in Europe effectively, the fact is we have two major geopolitical conflicts we're dealing with, plus the usual saber rattling with China. And so the world's a dangerous place. And I think as much as I think he's done a good job, these things have also, they've happened. And so I think there's some positive and some vulnerability there. I think, as I said, on the economy, people don't feel as good as the data suggests they should. And they're not feeling great. And so I think there's vulnerability there. And then on the border, immigration's obviously a mess. And the border situation is a mess. And he's very vulnerable on that issue. And then I would just say, I think crime is another area. Just generally, I think people feel less safe than they did 4 years ago, and that's a vulnerability as well.
And so normally I would save the breaking news and the big time prognostication for the end of the episode, but let's get right to it. We obviously saw Donald Trump continue his momentum, certainly recently in the New Hampshire primary, while President Biden, of course, won that primary as a write-in candidate and has since cemented support in other states, like in South Carolina. So from your perspective, what is the current state of the presidential race? And let's break some news now. Are you prognosticating that we will have Biden versus Trump part two in November?
Yeah, I mean, of course. And breaking news, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's a rematch, barring some kind of black swan type of event. And look, with two aging candidates, things can happen. But assuming nothing crazy happens, it's clearly going to be Trump v. Biden. It's 2020 all over again, and that's the story.
And, you know, I hear so many people talking about this subject, and a lot of people's sentiment is, we're not crazy about either of these candidates, and how many millions of people do we have in this country, and, you know, why are we not getting other or different choices?
Yeah,
why are we having Biden versus Trump part two again?
My response to people that say that is, what did you do to change it? Like, what did you do to change the outcome? And the answer is usually nothing. And so that's why, like, if you want change, you got to get out there and make the change. And I think, look, I think Biden's the incumbent. He has the advantage of incumbency, which is a huge advantage. And Trump owns the Republican Party. And
he has the advantage of incumbency, but, you know, what we really haven't seen before is I guess Donald Trump sort of has a little of that, not the immediate incumbency, but he has, you know, some recent incumbency, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, recent, that's a good point. Recent, you know, he held the office, and he held the office and then convinced all of his voters that he didn't actually lose. And, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't want to necessarily go down that rabbit hole, but he's convinced tens of millions of people that he didn't actually lose, which is absurd, because of course he did, but he has a very motivated voting block.
All right, so I'll put you more on the spot then. Who wins and why?
I think Biden wins because he may not be getting the benefit of a good economy, but he's not getting the detriment of a bad economy. He has the advantage of incumbency. I think at the end of the day, people will come out to keep Trump from holding office again. And I think January 6th still plays in the minds of voters, and it's going to become a bigger and bigger issue as we go along. And I think people are just super motivated to see that Trump doesn't get back in office. And I think those people come out, and that puts Biden back in for another term.
The last question on this, before we get into the employment law now part of the show, any sense of who the profile should be or will be for vice presidential candidate for, assuming it's Trump, for Trump?
It'll be, we actually had a note on this today in our weekly Coase and Currents.
Can you find those? I love it. Where can you find those, Howard?
On our website, Mike.
Coasen.com, www.coasen.com. And we're going to get to shortly the great podcast that Howard does as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's got to be somebody, it's loyalty. His number one criteria is loyalty to Donald J. Trump.
Regardless of the demographic?
Look, he picked Mike Pence last time. Like, what good did that do him from a demographic point of view? I don't think that, I mean, I think it'll have to be somebody with MAGA credentials. But most fundamentally, I think it's going to be somebody that he feels will be loyal to him. That's his litmus test.
Interesting. All right. Well, so let's bring this back a little bit to the employers and the corporations that are listening to this podcast. You mentioned messaging before when we were talking about President Biden and maybe some of the difficulties that he's having in the messaging area. From a labor and employment perspective, you also mentioned immigration as a big issue and a concern. What are the big issues from a labor and employment perspective being discussed, frankly, by both parties on the campaign trail that employers and employees should be watching?
I think, well, immigration for sure. And the package that's been making its way through the Senate appears to be dead, but obviously what's going on the border and immigration with the labor shortages that many of our clients still are experiencing is a huge issue. I think the kind of perennial issue of the gig employment model and the independent contractor versus employee issue is going to continue to percolate. AI and the role of AI as a replacement for human labor is a huge issue. Again, that's more of a, that's not a political issue. It's more of a policy issue, but how and when and why AI is deployed, and particularly the role of technology as a replacement for, like I said, human workers that's a societal issue. We are going to be grappling with that for many years to come. And I think that's being talked about. Both Trump and Biden are jockeying for union support. And obviously, you know, Biden has declared himself to be the most union-friendly president in history. You know, others can judge whether that's true, but he's certainly been more of a friend of organized labor. But while the unions may endorse Biden, the members of the unions, I think there are a lot of Trump-friendly union workers, those blue collar voters that are like core to his base of support. I think union and labor policy is going to continue to be a very hot topic and a very important constituency on the trail as we head to the election.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of what you just said, what's fascinating to me is that not only are both sides talking about the same issues from a labor and employment perspective, at least, but it seems that both sides are aiming their messages on these hot issues at some of the same groups. You mentioned the unions, how they're both really attacking that. I find that fascinating.
Well, because it's populism and the appeal to kind of the individual, for individual rights and the like, is the dominant strain running through American politics. And I mean, certainly that's Trump's calling card, and it's very much the Democrats as well. And so I think there's not a lot of daylight between the two parties in that respect. They're both trying to appeal through populist tactics, and a lot of these issues are things where each party can craft kind of a populist position for itself.
So you listed a whole bunch of issues that are at least either on the table in Congress or being batted around as potentially being on the table in Congress. Is Congress going to get anything done in 2024 that employers and employees will notice, or alternatively, are we looking at an election year where both sides are just going to refuse to do anything?
Well, in the labor and employment realm right now, the Congressional Review Act law to overturn the joint employer rule put out by the administration, it's making its way through Congress. It passed the House, as you know, and I think likely passes the Senate. Goes to the president's desk, presumably he'll veto it. And does it have enough votes for a veto override? Probably not. But yeah, Congress is still functional. The House just passed a tax package. The House is going to take up the Farm Bill, which is a once every 5-year agricultural package. The House has to pass an appropriation. The Congress has to pass an appropriations bill. Congress is going to pass an FAA reauthorization. So things are still happening. And it's it's not as dormant as this doesn't feel like as dormant a year as recent election years have felt to me.
Interesting. Why is
that? Or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, one, there's stuff they didn't get done before that has to get done, and they, you know, they can't necessarily keep kicking the can down the road. But I also think there's a desire to govern. There's a guy in the Oval Office who understands how the legislative process works, and will play ball. Like, more has gotten done. Bipartisan infrastructure package, for example, in this administration that couldn't get done in other recent administrations, that I think people would give credit for. So, you know, I it's hard to account for it on the basis of our politics that are so divided. But then again, the chambers are kind of narrowly divided, so everybody has more of a say than they normally would, and maybe that's leading to things, you know, continuing to get done.
And we've obviously been focusing on the federal front, either the executive branch or the legislative branch on the federal side. But we know that lots of other things, important things, are happening around the country on the state and local levels, things that employers need to be thinking about, need to be concerned about in some respects. Anything interesting from your perspective happening on the state and local levels that employers, businesses should be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, for one, a heavy focus on issues like affordable housing. I think a number of states are looking at solutions to affordable housing, which, if you look across the country, is one of those cross-cutting issues that is impacting so many people, so many places. Even rural America, places like, I don't know, take Montana, for example, where there's a hotly contested Senate race. The price of real estate in Montana has gone through the roof post-COVID because so many people moved to Montana during COVID. It's an issue in New York City. It's an issue in Montana. It's an issue all across the country that I think states are grappling with and trying to address. I think crime is another one. Naturally more concentrated in urban areas, but people are exasperated with the situation here from a crime point of view, and then education. What should the educational system look like? How should it function? I think they're more kitchen table kind of issues that are percolating in the states right now. But privacy is another big one, another one of those cross-cutting kind of 10-year issues that continues to percolate in the state. So there are a number of things. This is why we have state and local practices. Not everything happens in the nation's capital where I'm sitting right now. Lots of things happen across the country, and oftentimes more things get done across the country at the state and local level. And so you got to be protected at all levels and thinking about going on at all levels.
Yeah, what's even more interesting to me is, and the issues that you just listed, you know, most people, most employers, I think when they think about state and local issues, they think about the more obvious employment-related issues, non-compete stuff, abortion,
right,
paid leave laws. The issues that you're talking about, affordable housing, crime, education, they may not be as obvious from a labor and employment standpoint, but they clearly do impact employers, particularly now that we're in this still remote work environment.
I mean, enormously. Affordable housing is an enormous issue for if you're an employer. I mean, it goes to your workforce availability. And I think it's a huge issue. Lots of our clients, like we said earlier, have labor shortages that they're still grappling with, and those don't appear to be going anywhere. And those can be dramatically affected by housing affordability as far as the pool of available labor, by immigration, by some of these core issues that they're not paid leave, like you said, and the like, but they're, if you're an employer, you're thinking about these issues, or you should be.
Yeah, it's not just about the federal side. Well, so this half hour to me has been Exhibit A, why in fact you do keep coming on here for our anniversary episodes. This is so incredibly insightful, so helpful. And, you know, as you said, these are issues that employers and probably employees alike should be thinking about, maybe not just in an election year like this one, but, you know, in other years as well. Things are going to be interesting. And hopefully in February 2025, we'll have some more to talk about. Certainly some results to talk about.
Certainly have results. And yeah, look, if you're an employer, I don't care what business you're in, you need to understand where things are headed from a policy point of view. It dramatically affects your business. Again, all levels, not just here in Washington, but very much on the state and very much on the local levels. And being tuned into it makes a ton of sense, and probably now more than ever with the workforce challenges as far as available labor that I keep alluding to. So interesting time.
No question about it. And I know enough to know that my podcast is not the only podcast out there, let alone at our firm, Cozen O'Connor. You, Howard, are also involved in a regular successful podcast series. Remind us what it is and where people can find it if they want to hear more about sort of all things politics.
The Beltway Briefing, Mike. We've probably been doing it for as long as you've been doing this. It's one of these long-running things. We have a lot of fun. It's half a dozen of us from Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies getting together every week and bantering about politics and kicking ideas around and having a little bit of fun. And it's on all the usual platforms, Spotify, iTunes, etc. So find it there, and appreciate everybody listening.
That's awesome. The Beltway Briefing, it is definitely a good listen, an interesting listen. Howard Schweitzer, you make this anniversary each year even more special. Seventh anniversary, and you've been here from the start. I really appreciate you continuing to come on, and look forward to having you on for our eighth anniversary next year, if not sooner.
Mike, thank you. It's always a pleasure to come on with you. Thanks to your listeners, and look forward to being back next year.
That was so interesting, so informative, as always. I am going to end the way I started, though, and that is by thanking all of you for listening to this podcast. Whether it was your first episode today or whether you've been here for the long haul, I really appreciate it, and I value all of you as listeners. I'll continue to bring you some great topics and discussion. I'll continue to bring you some great guests, whether it's from the government, whether it's from corporate America, whether it's some other legal analysis by some other lawyers. I'm hoping to continue to make this podcast something worth listening to. So thank you all again. Happy 7th anniversary to all of us. And until the next time, I hope all of your labor is productive.